I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle, a great conversation about politics and current issues in our state. I represent the political center, and I'm joined on the left by the political left, Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning.
And making a rare appearance on his own radio show on the political right, Greg Hughes.
Good morning, Natalie. Happy to be here.
Great to have you. I want to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court appointments that Governor Herbert gets to make, but let's start out by talking about Mitt Romney apparently making Utah his domicile, his home. Has a home in Holiday. I guess he's got a home in Deer Valley, sold his home in Belmont, Mass. What could this mean politically, guys?
There's no reason for Mitt to move, officially change his... I don't believe in the kind of cosmic, oh, things just happen. I mean, they're calculating folks. There's calculating people around him. He's changing that official residence for a reason. And my guess is, just looking around, the easy kind of good pluckings for the next 15 or 20 years for the Mitt Romney family would be Senate. Wouldn't that be fun for him?
Hatch Senate seat.
Yeah, yeah. Hatch Senate seat. It's going to be open. His for the taking. Kills Hughes' big plan to take over Senate seat. But there it was.
You know, I love that you see ghosts everywhere. I guess that's what you do as a Democrat. There's a bad guy behind every door, Jim. I think you can sum up Mitt Romney's interest and probably Mrs. Romney's interest in Utah in one word: grandbabies. I'm gonna tell you, he's building a home just down the street.
Wants to be close to family.
Yeah, he's got a boy that's got a son that's got a house close by. I think his family's here. I think Mitt's heart has always been here. But I'll tell you politically, if he doesn't run for president and win, if he is without something to do and wants to be engaged, I think the world is his oyster here in the state of Utah.
Greg, you're in leadership in the Republican Party in our legislature. You know what it's like to be one of the elite politicians in our state.
I'm just loving saying that. Do you know who you're talking to?
But what do you think it's like being Mitt Romney and having the relevance that he has had and then to be going to being a grandfather? There's just a part that says to me, you can be really into your grandbabies and still want to run for Senate.
I agree. And I'll tell you where I think Mitt Romney holds a special place, different than unsuccessful presidential candidates of the past, is that I think if you look at the world right now, Republican, Democrat, Independent, whoever you are, if anyone paid attention to that race in 2012, someone's got to be saying, a lot of people have to be saying, he was kind of right. This whole thing about Putin that he was warning the American people about, that he was being mocked by the president about, yeah, that guy looks pretty aggressive right now. He's not like McCain. He's not like what was the guy's name? Dukakis. Jim, one of your heroes. Look, the guy I think has a lot of attention right now because I think the narratives of his 2012 race and some of the things that he talked about seem to be coming, are happening around us.
Jim, and so I'm just waiting for Greg to say Benghazi.
Yeah. Oh, I'm ready. I'm waiting. That's my ace up my sleeve.
A 65-year-old Mitt Romney-ish, I don't know how old he is, winning an election and then going back to Washington and allowing the real Mitt Romney to emerge would be very interesting. Because he's got to be somewhere between Governor Romney and the guy who was on the platform with the seven crazies there during the debate, and being able to kick back and be the real Mitt Romney. It would be interesting to see who is the real Mitt Romney and see where he would lead Utah and the country.
We talked about flip-flops in the last show last week, and we got a different form of it now because that's been the thing with Romney is you don't know what he is.
Yeah.
But
yep.
Hey, well, let's go to Mia Love. Her ads have hit. My husband said to me the other day, I liked that ad. That was neat. She's got some good thinking behind her ads. But she has an event recently with Doug Owens where she refuses to debate him in front of a group of business leaders. Is that smart politics, Greg? What's
Absolutely.
Going on?
Absolutely. Look, she's ahead in the polls. She's got the fundraising advantage. The only thing that that Mr. Owens would have in a race against Mia Love is Mia's opportunity to put him on an equal stage or give him some kind of venue where people would see them at the same time. I mean, it's her race to lose. I wouldn't take a person, you know, 28 points behind in the polls. I'm trying to bait Jim, and give him a stick to beat me with. I wouldn't do it. I don't think she has to. You'd have to have a much different race to try and take and prop up your opponent.
Yeah.
The way a debate would,
Jim,
would potentially
do
it.
I'm not seeing a path to victory for Doug Owens at this point.
The more people get to know Mia Love, the less likely they are to vote for her. I mean, those crosstabs on the last poll I saw, which was about 11 points, she was ahead of Owens. Her unfavorables were there with Swallows. I mean, people don't like her. And the more they get to know her, the less likely they are to vote for her. On Owens, on the other side, once they get to know him, once they know his background, once they know his family, he's only known by about 12% of the district. His ratings soar. So what she needs to do is do what Dave Hansen has told her to do, crawl in the cave, don't come out, come up with these canned commercials of a bunch of little kids in kindergarten, and you're going to win. But by refusing, I mean, what a prima donna. She comes out to the chamber and says, I won't appear if that man is in the room. I'll speak, but I have to speak first, and I'm not speaking if my opponent is there. Now, imagine the conversation. Speaker Bonner, I have an important message for Utah. Can you clear the house? Because I don't want anybody else hear when I'm speaking.
Oh,
so please clear this house.
I have seen Mia Love as a confident and strong orator.
And look, here's what I love about this race. Jim, we're the kind of the white guy club, okay? That's what we're the predominant, we're the majority here in Utah. I am telling you, if Mia Love was a Democrat and I said, if you met her, you wouldn't like her. People meet her, they don't think she's smart. Immediately, the Democrat Party would say, this is the problem with this all male, white Republican Party in Utah. They don't like women. They don't give minorities proper respect or you know, their due. You can't. It's just a double standard. I will tell you that if you had a conversation with Mia Love, you couldn't help yourself but like her. She is a very personable mayor in Utah County. I think she's a great candidate, and I think you're going to see. Not only are you going to see her win, and by the way, it's not all of Mr. Owens' fault. I mean, it's a Republican district. My goodness, I mean, the percentages are there. But you're going to see Mia on a national stage. I think she is going to have a prominent role in this upcoming Congress, and you're going to see a lot of Mia, so get ready.
Yeah. Jim, I tend to agree with my colleague on the right. Let's go to Senator Lee, another conservative who got some approval, ratings out of Dan Jones. He does well in his own party, but among all Utahns had a 54% approval rating and a 35% disapproval rating. So I know that's twisted there, Greg, because you want to look at the Republicans. This isn't about what can he win. It's about how does this state view him? And those are pretty low by Utah standards.
Well, look, we are a red state. If you were saying that this person was very popular with the Democrats, then you'd say, well, you know, the numbers of Democrats aren't going to really help that candidate or that senator. Senator Lee being that popular with Republicans, coincidentally, in the red state of Utah.
74% approval with Republicans.
It's a very good thing. And if you take Senator Lee's year-over-year approval rating numbers, they've gone up double digits. I think Senator Lee has been smart. He's put some former colleagues of mine in the House as staffers. I think he's reaching out in a big way to opinion leaders and policymakers in the state of Utah. And I think his approval ratings soaring are proof of that.
Jim, I'll give you a chance to rebut in the second segment.
It's a deal.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Greg Hughes and Jim DeBacchus. In our next segment, we'll talk about Supreme Court appointments by Governor Herbert.
This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Greg Hughes on the right.
And I'm Natalie Gochner, and I represent the political moderates. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, which, just by the way, doesn't give me a spot in the title. Just making that record clear again. There are three sides to the aisle, and I am in the middle.
You're just right there in the center there. You just don't know which way. But you're with me now. Come on.
Greg
come on
was waxing so eloquent about Senator Lee's, you know, capabilities and promise that he didn't give you any time to make your point about his low approval ratings within the state. Let's just be clear. They're not low in the Republican Party. They just are 54% statewide, which is a little low for our state.
Yeah, and it's way up. And I blame groups.
Right trajectory.
I blame a lot of groups like the Chamber and real live, honest to goodness, people that know better that are kind of camouflaging in and pretending he's normal. He's not. He just hired the president of the Tea Party nationally to come out and run his campaign. This is all camouflage. Remember, he's the guy that shut down the government with Ted Cruz. Cost taxpayers $24 billion with that stupid stunt for which no good came, except Mike Lee got a lot of names of national conservatives. This guy is way, way, way out there for Utah.
And yet I saw him, you know, author, pen a Wall Street Journal op-ed on tax reform. He co-authored that with Marco Rubio from Florida, senator from Florida. And it's a very balanced, moderate-like proposal that simplifies our income tax, gets rid of a lot of the fat cat deductions, expands the earned income tax credit, things you would like, Jim, and at the same time lowers the corporate income tax rate, Greg, that you would like and I like. So this is a senator that is relevant. He's authoring opinion editorials with presidential candidates, and he's in the middle there.
I wonder
Jim's
who wrote
rolling
it for
his
him.
Eyes.
Hey, look, I mean, the thing I can't stand in politics are do-nothing people, okay? I just don't—I mean, if people just—they want to perpetuate their own position, so they don't want to offend anyone, so they do nothing. You can't say that about Senator Lee. I think his opposition to extending the United States credit limit even higher in a time where these deficits and deficit spending is so out of control, that's a hard thing to do. You got to give him at least props for saying, trying to draw a line and say, look, we've got to get this under control.
Spending $24 billion to draw the line and say we got to balance
the
budget.
The only reason you didn't lose
it
is because you just raised the credit limit. You All can't right. just keep raising that credit card. You got to do something at some point.
Let's stay in the Beltway for just a minute and let's talk about the incompetence of our Secret Service. Can you imagine if they were over the Ebola crisis? What would be going on? What is going on?
Can I just say, I am so shocked by the stories. I mean, and it's been a little bit of a slow drip. We heard crazy stories about Secret Service agents in, you know, in Central America during, you know, prepping for a presidential visit. Then we have a guy that literally jumps the fence, gets into the building. Well, you can't throw the lock. You can't throw the deadbolt on the front door. I mean, we used to look at these Secret Service guys and Clint Eastwood's played a Secret Service guy.
It's an awkward contrast to make, and I apologize for that. But you know, the South Salt Lake police shooting, that you can watch the video on Fox 13's webpage, and Sim Gill saying this was okay and justified, whatever. But you know, this guy gets shot in front of a 7-Eleven, just walking away, you know, silently, and a guy gets into the you know back front door, whatever it is, of the White House, and is barrier?
I am blown away. I really am. I can't believe it's gotten that bad with what I thought was, you know, legendary.
Congressman Chaffetz has called for the resignation of the head of the Secret Service, Jim.
And I'm calling for Congressman Chaffetz's resignation. So
the Tribune doesn't agree with you. Maybe you need to lay off. Quit helping that Tribune so much. They don't even agree with you. They've endorsed Congressman Chaffetz.
Jason. We grew up. At least us old guys grew up with a view of the Secret Service as almost mythic, with this almost superpower ability to look at a crowd and talk in earpieces and control the universe.
Jump in front of a bullet.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it may be they have been rather incompetent or rather mundane all along, and that was just a kind of J. Edgar Hoover PR thing. I suspect somewhere in the middle is where we are. Clearly now there's bad leadership, and there needs to be a whole review of everything. I went to the White House Christmas party one year, and they let you wander around that main floor. And I went and opened the door there. I mean, it was open that night. That's on the north side, the side that you—
Towards the ellipse.
Yeah, and toward where you go up to where the— to the second floor there, and it was open then. So I don't know whether they don't lock it or they lost the key or what happens, but it just seems incredible. And now these other stories where there were shooters and a guy got, how do you get in an elevator with the president and nobody notices and you're a stranger? This story came out. Not only was the guy in an elevator, but he had a gun. Ken Ivory would be happy with that. Did you hear that one?
I just know things happen. I remember during the Olympics, this is one of those things I hesitate to even share, but I'll just do it. A PC laptop. Who's the guy that was such a colorful?
Dale Shanze.
Oh, yeah.
Dale Shanze somehow makes it into a private setting with President Bush. You know, you remember how he flew out on the morning of opening ceremony? And, you know, it was a lockdown at the Capitol. I mean, it was tricky stuff, but Shanze got in.
Wow. Just like that, huh?
He was friends with the governor's son. Let's just stop there.
Many years ago, when President Carter, before you guys were born, came here, and I was a Cub reporter for a radio station, and I managed to weasel my way in with a microphone. And as the president was getting in an elevator, he was over at the tall church office building. And so I just barreled my way right into the elevator with Jimmy Carter, except a big husky Secret Service agent just kind of thumped me in the chest as the door was closing and went, no, you don't. And I would expect that anybody that's going to, that they don't know, that tries to get in the elevator with the president, that's the kind of reaction you'd want to see.
Yeah. Right? I love the Secret Service. I remember during the Olympics, a woman Secret Service employee who was the last person to clear the governor's office before they were doing their sweep. And she came through, and she was just so professional. And they had a communication center right in the governor's office. You know, they always have one for wherever the president is. And that was in Gary Doxey's office, if you guys know Gary. But I just remember her saying, "You've got about 5 minutes," just looking at me. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Jim DeBacchus and Greg Hughes. Let's talk about the Utah Supreme Court. We have two changing Supreme Court justices. It is Jill Parrish, who's got a new federal appointment. Congrats to her. And then Ron Nearing, who's stepping down. I was serving in the governor's office when both of them were selected and confirmed, and one's a non-Mormon and one's a woman. So we are losing two pieces of the diversity that some people really value on the Supreme Court. What will Governor Herbert do, Greg?
Well, you know, look, I understand when we talk about gender, ethnicity, religion, that we're looking for people that have broad perspective. I get that. But to me, that's the dressing, or those are nice to haves. I would hope that really the selection of a state Supreme Court jurist would be someone whose judicial disposition and their record on the bench is stellar. There's a history there that we would be proud to have them, regardless of their gender, regardless of their faith, that those things would not be disqualifiers or qualifiers necessarily. I think if you have a lot of great candidates, take the pool and get the best person. But honestly, I still believe that we will stop discriminating when we stop noticing. And having conversations or driving these decisions by gender and race, just it doesn't resonate with me. I think you've got to look at the person and the job that they're looking to fill.
Jim, I want you to wax eloquent on that, but I just want to just ask Greg if he's ever been a serious minority in some sense of the
I have. I've been a religious minority. Mormons in Pennsylvania,
Pittsburgh.
They think you're Amish. When you're in Pittsburgh and you say you're a Mormon, they think you're an Amish
person.
How
about in the last 10 years?
No, I'm not.
I only ask it because it's just an interesting thing. I mean, I was at the YWCA luncheon and watched as they documented and shared the video on women's place in society. And I left feeling empty.
Really?
Well, I left feeling empty because between abuse and between women not in elected office, there's a basic injustice there that made me feel hollow. Jim, you were there.
I don't know what planet Greg lives on.
He's in the majority in that
I
planet,
am, sir.
I mean, to say that Supreme Court justices, Scalia was the smartest guy, or Thomas was the smartest guy. I mean, these are political picks. Wake up, smell the coffee, look at it. It sends a message to the country when you pick somebody. It's not like you take an SAT
Greg
test.
Sotomayor, a political pick.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
It isn't.
Thank you.
No, I agree. But to pretend and be in this oblivious ozone of, well, all these justices, they were just picked by who did the best SAT score. And judicial disposition. I mean, it's politics plays a role.
What I like is the notion that you can get the judicial disposition and diversity, and you can.
But we haven't in Utah. We have 72 district court judges, and we have a quota system. We have a complete quota system that the governor believes in, and it's got a lot of white guys in there because 69 out of the 72 are the same person. So you talk about a quota system. That is
Greg, you got to shoot a flare. Shoot a flare, and I'll give you some time.
I got this flare gun here. There was this criticism about the University of Utah's medical school and how they were picking candidates. And I went through a mock selection process. And so we saw all these applications of these students
this was
that were
just
trying to get
for
in.
For you to have an experience of
yeah,
what this is
like. Yeah, just to kind of empathy. Uh-huh. You know, yeah. Just so, uh-huh. Look, so you don't think
4.0, high MCATs.
They gave policymakers an opportunity to weigh these applications and look for, and I'm going to tell you, you do look for the diversity of experience, and you know that adds context to that student body, and that is absolutely part of the equation. However, all that said, you can't help but get, you know, white people in Utah applying to University of Utah's medical school, and it's not a conspiracy. It's just where we live. Mm-hmm. And to penalize that or to think that there is something wrong with the majority of white Caucasians that are going there and applying, and to say that there's something wrong with that without acknowledging where we live. I mean, come on. There's some realities to demographics. I mean,
don't
you're just
you
going to get
though,
with...
When you have five state Supreme Court justices, don't you think it's just right that a couple of them not be LDS?
Not on that reason alone. I would think that up the chain and a candidate pool, that people's faith are not what's driving them within that finding
but,
pool.
But I think you can find all the things you want and also get someone that brings deeper perspective because of the diversity.
Up to a third of the people that appear before some district courts are minority. To have 69 out of 72... You end up with Fergusons when you end up with people who don't see people like themselves. They don't see their tribe. They don't see a connection. Dispensing justice, whether it's police officers or whether it is court justices, we need this diversity. It makes us a better society. 69 out of 72 are all Mormons on the Supreme Court or all non-drinkers on the DABC. May produce a little bit of smugness for a moment, but it does bad things for our state.
Greg, we have to go to gripes, and you're welcome to gripe about reverse discrimination if you'd like, or I'm sure you have something queued up.
Well, look, this is I don't know if it's much of a gripe. Well, kind of is. Look, the Tribune, and I know that this is Jim loves this. The Tribune has endorsed Congressman Chaffetz, and one of the reasons they have is that they have pointed to his asking Democrat congressmen to come to Utah, fly over the wilderness lands, appreciate what Utah is dealing with federal lands, and that bipartisan effort is one that the Tribune appreciates. I want to point out that in Utah, transportation infrastructure, multimodal transportation infrastructure, we're an example for the country. We had the Republican congressional, the House transportation chair here. 2 weeks ago, we had President Obama's transportation cabinet members, secretary here 2 days ago, and you have a bipartisan full court press on what Utah's doing, and it should be heralded and screamed from the rooftops in a strident partisan political climate in Utah or in America. Utah's leading out. Well, I need to hear that more.
Well said, Greg. Jim, I hope you'll leave me some time for my gripe.
I will. The governor took after me speaking
That'll be my gripe.
On Medicaid expansion, saying some bad things on Doug Wright today. The message is stop playing these political games. Just accept full Medicaid expansion and go to the website Medicaid for Utah. Medicaid, the letter for Utah. Sign the petition back to Herbert. Medicaid for Utah.
Very good. My gripe has to do with the setting here in the studio, and I have to be careful as I do this, but just so the listeners know, Jim is wearing a nice light blue Oxford shirt. I'm in a black business suit. Our producer, Tyler, is in a preppy plaid shirt. And I'm looking over at my colleague on the right, and he has a black T-shirt on with a skull and crossbones.
Pittsburgh Pirates, ma'am.
I've been staring at it the whole show, and I've been thinking, what is it that brings the guy that represents the right wearing a skull and crossbones? Greg, acquit yourself.
It's Pirate Baseball playoff time. We haven't been 21 years ago. Last year, we finally broke into the playoffs again, and we're in it again this year. Go Bucks.
Good luck. Good luck. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Hope you've enjoyed the conversation. The program's produced by Tyler Ford. Thank you so much for listening.